Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up, the economy stalls. What does it mean for interest rates and the share market? That's next. Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 3rd of June 2026, a day where the Australian share market rose 0.7%. We'll have the details with Josh Gilbert from eToro in a few moments. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail of the top consumer finance and market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first, the Bureau of Statistics says Australia's economy grew by just 0.3% in the March quarter to remain at an annual rate of 2.5%. A lot of it had to do with huge investment in data centres. Household spending was up, but that was because of the rising price of essentials like electricity, gas and other fuels. On discretionary items, their wants instead of needs, it rose just 0.1%. And productivity was down. One measure, GDP per hour of work, declining 0.6% in the quarter. To explain what this all means for the economy and the direction of interest rates, I spoke with NAB senior markets economist Taylor Nugent. So Taylor, how would you describe the pace of economic growth in Australia?
Well, I think if we look over the past year, the pace of growth is okay. It's moderate, but it's certainly not shooting the lights out. And I think when we look at kind of the recent momentum, it does suggest that we are seeing some cooling from that pace of growth.
Okay, so what's driving it? And it is investment in data centres perhaps masking a trend towards stagflation?
So I think, you know, when we look at the drivers, what we saw, and again, if we zoom out, if we think about the past year, household consumption has been a big part of that driver, but that was much more obvious kind of early through the middle of 2025 than it has been in the more recent data. And so I would say that there is some clear slowing in the growth coming from the household sector. At the same time, as you mentioned, private business investment has been incredibly strong. That's driven by data center demands. And that certainly is driving the kind of the domestic demand figures. What I would say there though, is that while that's contributing to demand, it is very import intensive. And so the overall impact on GDP isn't as large as you might think.
We saw a lot of headlines earlier about an economy running ahead of capacity. Is this still the case?
I think what we're seeing is an economy that, you know, when we look at GDP growth over the past year, it's 2.5%. The economy, we're in a supply constrained world at the moment. We're not going back to the type of environment that we would like to see where we can generate and sustain faster growth than that. But, you know, we think and the RBA thinks that a number closer to 2, maybe 2.25% is sustainable. Over the past year, we're a bit stronger than that. But certainly that's signs of some of the slowing that we've seen in the most recent data is consistent with growth that is coming back down towards those more sustainable levels.
This is backward looking though and doesn't include the full impact of the war and the fuel excise cut. We know that the household savings rate is down. What does this mean or say about household consumption? And is there a threat of overall negative growth in the future, noting that GDP per capita is negative in the quarter?
Yeah, so when we think about that dynamic, as you say, this is data for the first quarter of the year. So maybe it captures a little bit of impact of what we saw with the beginning of the conflict in the Middle East at the end of February. But really, this is a stock take of where we were before this latest shock. When we think about how we're kind of overlaying that on top, we do think that, you know, there is material cost pressure on the back of this, you know, and just fuel as an example, but it is broader than that. And we think that means that some of those drivers that saw consumption growth pick up through 2025 are easing and will continue to ease. And so we would expect consumption growth to slow a little bit further from here. We think GDP growth will continue to slow from here. That will help ease some of those inflation pressures and make sure they're not persistent. There's a risk of, you know, of a negative print on GDP, but our forecast is certainly not for a recession. And we do see growth continuing, just slowing a bit further as we move through 2026.
Okay, so what do you see as the key to getting Australia's economy expanding sustainably? And as you mentioned earlier, that sustainable level's closer to 2%. How do you sell that story when the headlines would suggest to get down to 2%, that's a bad thing?
Yeah, well, I think it's a challenge, and it does come back to this point that there's a bit of a mismatch between the perception and what policymakers are trying to do. And it's because, you know, they have demand management tools in a supply constrained world. And so it's a difficult balance for them to manage. And it's a difficult communication challenge as well, that we just can't sustain the type of growth that we've seen more recently. Even if you look over historical standards, it's not exceptional. It's just a bit too strong for what the economy can absorb with those inflation pressures. So when we look forward, you know, certainly productivity growth has been soft. It remains soft in these latest figures. That's one thing that's this kind of driving some of these capacity constraints and meaning that we can't sustain much faster growth without finding those capacity pressures. Some improvement there would certainly be helpful. But in the near term, you know, this isn't a problem that's unique to Australia. It's something that's shared among advanced economies around the world, really. Certainly, if you look at Europe, the UK, they're facing similar, maybe even more challenging set of circumstances in terms of generating growth that isn't hitting those capacity constraints and driving inflation. And so it's a complicated set of problems. But certainly when we look forward, we do think that the story is consistent with, you know, enough cooling in growth that this inflation challenge that we're facing into the near term is not something that's going to become entrenched and drive, you know, big stagflationary outcomes over time.
So what does that then mean for monetary policy?
So for monetary policy, I think, again, let's look at kind of where we were facing into this latest shock and what that means for the RBA. They thought that growth needed to cool, as we talked about before, to be comfortable that inflation is going to sustainably get back to where they want to see it. And I think they'll look at this data as evidence that it was cooling. So it was heading in the right direction. Things were moving in the right direction. And that recalibration that we've seen from the RBA in the form of 75 basis points of increases so far this year, that was doing the work. And that was probably going to be enough for them to get comfortable that things were moving in the right direction. Overlay the material inflation and pipeline inflation pressure that's in the pipeline at the moment because of this conflict in the Middle East. We think that that keeps their bias towards a little bit more tightening. But certainly the risks are becoming increasingly balanced. And if we see further slowing in the labor market, if we see growth take another leg lower from here, those are things that would mean that the RBA would shift their focus a little bit just away from inflation to something that's a bit more of a balanced outlook. But for now, the risk is still for another increase from the RBA.
That's Taylor Nugent there from NAB to the Australian share market now and its reaction, where the 200 actually rose after the GDP data was released as markets bets a June interest rate rise is off the cards. The index closing 0.7% higher at 8,785. BHP hit record highs. The banks did well, but tech stocks fell after having a good day yesterday. And for more, I spoke with Josh Gilbert from eToro. Josh, so the Australian share market's up today. How would you describe investor sentiment at the moment, given the global uncertainties?
Yeah, I'd say cautious but resilient. I think there's not a big enough reason for investors to be sat on the sidelines at the moment. But also you can't ignore that global uncertainty, right? You know, markets are still dealing with higher oil prices. You've got this geopolitical tension that's continuing. And then, of course, that then spills over to the local economy, which provides a leg of uncertainty. But investors are seeing strong corporate earnings, huge spending on AI infrastructure. That's really helping risk appetite. But obviously locally, the ASX is benefiting from that global risk on mood, but ultimately it's not the NASDAQ. That's at a record high. So local market, much more exposed to banks, resources. Resources have had a great month, which is really helping the local index. But as I say, AI is sort of driving the global narrative. You know, local investors aren't getting the same reward, but I think it's helping sort of sentiment generally.
I guess that AI investment also includes that of data centers, right? And we saw that come through in the GDP figures earlier today. Did that influence trade at all or shift interest rate expectations?
I think the bottom line coming out of those numbers was that the economy weakened in Q1, right? At the bottom line there. That has shifted rate expectations back slightly because we're looking at an economy that was softer than expected and what the RBA expected. As you say, that sort of Weakness came from household and government spending. We know the consumer is under pressure at the moment, but slightly offset by surging data center spending. And if we do look at sort of the pricing for hikes, go back 2 weeks ago, we were looking at about a 90% chance of a hike. That's shifted to about 60% to where we are now. So I think today's reading gives the RBA a bit more room to pause, which we're likely to see this month, assess the data. But I don't think it takes another hike completely off the table this year, though.
Okay, we are 3 weeks in from the federal budget, right, with CGT implications to come for investors, particularly for the share, for the property market, but also for the share market. Are you seeing any reaction for investors on the market?
I wouldn't say we're seeing any dramatic shifts just yet, especially in investor positioning. But look, it's certainly questions that we're getting asked. And, you know, something, you know, I'm asking, it's a, you know, question that's running around the office. Should we sell? Should we, you know, what should we do, right? And I think it was something that was meant for property that spilled over into the share market. And as I say, I think the biggest one is that there's questions and they're not answered. The rules obviously are not due to start until next year. And I think there's still a lot of detail to come. I think there's a fair argument that comes about what's next for investors, where they put capital. Naturally, there's maybe a question mark to move to dividends, especially in Australia where we have franked dividends. They obviously play a big role. Ultimately, though, I don't think this removes a long-term case for investing. And I think that's really important here. Yes, changes are going to come into place. But when we think about compounding and growth through share markets, I don't think we want to see people, you know, not investing just because there's CGT changes.
The market's preparing for what could be the largest share market debut in history, with Elon Musk's SpaceX set to finalize its IPO. Anthropic, the Claude owner, is likely to be next. And then there's the possibility of ChatGPT owner OpenAI. What's your take on this broader interest in the space economy and artificial intelligence, given this rush to market from some of the largest companies in the world? And what do you think investors need to know?
Well, I mean, firstly, yeah, 2026 looks like it's shaping up to be the year for mega cap IPOs, right? After quite a few years, we're on the verge of seeing some of the biggest public debuts in history. And I think that's an exciting prospect for many retail investors, because for years, some of the biggest names in AI and space have been behind closed doors. I think when it comes to, you know, the space economy really gaining traction, it's not just about launching rockets. It's about data centers in space, taking that infrastructure off the planet ultimately. And that's what's driving, you know, a lot of interest in these businesses. And of course, you know, we know how much, you know, companies like Anthropic and OpenAI play in our everyday lives now with, you know, Claude and ChatGPT. I think what's probably the standout and what investors need to know is that, you know, these valuations are coming in, as I say, at record levels. You know, SpaceX, for example, isn't a profitable business. Anthropic potentially is saying it is. But I think we need to sort of get a real look under the bonnet. You know, we want to see revenue. We want to see losses, you know, what everything's coming through at. As I say, the excitement is clear, but the valuations are, you know, extraordinarily high. And I think that's really important for investors to sort of know. There's a lot of excitement. It shows there's a lot of demand. But, you know, I think there needs to be a level of caution before we sort of jump into these IPOs.
And finally, in wrapping up, what are you telling your clients right now? Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Look, I mean, we keep talking about AI, don't we? But it's hard to stay away from it. I think there's obviously a lot of opportunities. And I think for us, the AI winners list is certainly getting longer. We're seeing AI continue to evolve day to day. I think what we're seeing in AI right now is the shift from thinking to doing. So training the models was really the thinking phase. Now we're into the phase of agents, inference, real world deployment, robots. And I think it's physical AI where, you know, AI can see, it can act in the real world, so robots, etc. So for me, I think NVIDIA's numbers, you know, last month told us that the AI boom has plenty of runway. And ultimately, the AI runway is broadening now. So I certainly think there's still plenty of opportunities in that sort of infrastructure layer.
And that is Josh Gilbert from eToro, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Give it a like, review and subscribe if you enjoy it. Don't forget you can watch On the Money during the 6:30 weekday edition of SBS World News on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.